Good evening. All right, let's turn on over to Hebrews chapter 5. And we'll pick back up there. If I can even find it right now, I feel like my brain is working at like a half level right now because I went to bed at like midnight, maybe a little bit after, fell asleep. And then for some reason, I woke up at like 4:30 and I just couldn't go back to sleep. So it's just been one of those days, I guess. My body just wanted to stay awake. But all right, let's go to Hebrews 5. And we're just going to start by reading verses. Let's actually read the whole chapter. And we'll go from there. For every high priest is taken from among men, is appointed on behalf of men and things pertaining to God, in order to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and misguided, since he himself also is beset with weakness. And because of it, he is obligated to offer sacrifices for sins, as for the people, so also for himself. And no one takes the honor to himself, but receives it when he is called by God, even as Aaron was. So also Christ did not glorify himself so as to become a high priest, but he who said to him, "You are my son, today I have begotten you," just as he also says in another passage, "You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek." In the days of his flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplication with loud crying and tears to the one able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety. Although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. And having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Concerning him, we have much to say, and it is hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, and you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. All right, so last week we started chapter 5, and then I kind of brought up a little bit. Remember from chapter 4, how chapter 4 ends. Jesus he's already been introduced a few times in Hebrews as a high priest. But chapter 4, he really just drives this point home. He tells us Jesus is a high priest. He was tempted in all the ways that you've been tempted, you know, and he still came out on top. That's super encouraging for us. Amen? Jesus is an overcomer. And now he's building off of this even more as our high priest. He's talking about high priests in general. And then he talks about Jesus being our high priest. And I think it's just a really cool passage. Chapter 5 is just really cool. Because if you really get to see the humanity, the fact that Jesus, God, did come down and was in the flesh, and what he had to go through, and then he still overcomes, and he is faithful, and he loves us, and that he wants to draw all men to himself, that's pretty encouraging. He went through so much, and he loves us. And that is the high priest that we serve. That's why the writer of Hebrews is telling us, he says, Jesus is the guy. Jesus is Lord of lords. He is the King of kings. So last week we kind of started the beginning. We'll just run over a little bit of this again. In the beginning, he talks about every high priest taken from among men is appointed on behalf of the men and things pertaining to God, right? So you have high priests who are set apart. Last week we got to talk about how, you know, some of their duties. We might address this again. I'm not exactly sure how far I want to go down that road. But the high priest is obviously very important, right? And then we got to talk about how no one takes, in verse 4, he says, no one takes the honor to himself. Is that the politics that you see today? Is this the nature of men in leadership today? Oh, they're a great leader, right? They're absolutely the best leader that we've had. They're stellar, right? And their defining quality is their humility. Oftentimes, you don't hear that out loud, right? The defining quality for lots of leaders, if humility was one of them, most people would mark that way down here. And the thing is that most people take glory to themselves. That's how the way of the world works. But that's not the way of Jesus. This is not how the high priest is functioning. This is not what he does. And so the author of Hebrews is writing, and he says, hey, even the high priests, they're not even to take glory to themselves. They're not calling themselves. Aaron was called. He says Jesus didn't even glorify himself, did he? No, he is the whole foundation is one of humility. That's what a true leader does. A true leader is humble. And so we talked about that. If you remember last week, who are the high priests? Well, who are the two high priests that we predominantly talked about last week that were poor representations of a humble high priest? Yeah, I heard one in the front. Is there anybody else back there? Who are the? They were bad high priests. They weren't even legitimate in many ways. Annas and Caiaphas, right? And Caiaphas is—he's not a very nice guy. He was not very nice to Jesus. Neither was Annas. Remember Caiaphas, if I'm not mistaken, he's the one that said, "Hey, it's pretty expedient to kill this one guy, right?" And that's the high priest that's talking. He's the one that's saying, "We should probably just kill the Messiah." Okay, wow, that's crazy. The guy who's supposed to be leading, the spiritual revolutionary guy, he's the one that wants to spearhead basically killing the Messiah. But yeah, we talked about that at least that last week as well. So now we kind of get to this point. Jesus didn't glorify himself. Who glorified Jesus? The Father, right? It was not Jesus glorifying himself, but he who said to him, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." Now this is kind of where we closed out last week. Where was this also referenced to in the book of Hebrews? Because this is Psalm 2. Well, and I said also, okay, so. Because Kevin last week was trying to be smart with the Hebrews 5. Chapter 1. In chapter 1, we also get to see this statement. You are my son, today I have begotten you. So, let's go back to chapter 1 real briefly. This is probably just good. Remember chapter 1, the writer of Hebrews is very good at writing. He's very good at what he does. In the beginning, he lays a lot of stuff out that he's going to be expounding upon as he goes throughout the book. But Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1, God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And he is the radiance, this is the Son, and he is the radiance of his glory, in the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become as much better than the angels, as he has inherited a more excellent name than they. For to which of the angels did he ever say, "You are my son, today I have begotten you"? This is where we also see this reference. Now, at what point was Jesus really clearly, definitively proclaimed to everyone that he is the begotten son of Jesus, begotten son of God? At his ascension, right? He's resurrected. The full resurrection takes him in the ascension, and then he takes his seat at the right hand of God, right? Having become as much better than the angels. Now remember in chapter 2, this is a lot of recap. Hopefully I'm not losing too many of you. In chapter 2, what was very significant about Jesus' life on earth? I I got some hand signals, some people mouthing it. Jesus was lower than the angels. In Hebrews chapter 2, he makes that clear. It says he was lower than the angels. And so now, the where Hebrews chapter 1 is placing him is above the angels. Today you are my son, having inherited a more excellent name than the angels. This is his position. He is the begotten son. Now, go back to Hebrews chapter 5. Remember, Jesus is glorified at his ascension. He is now proclaimed, manifested to everyone that he is the begotten Son of God. And this is where Hebrews is, hopefully I haven't lost you too much, we're building off of each chapter, you can kind of see. Jesus is being proclaimed as high priest now at his ascension as well. He is the high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. This is the picture now. In conjunction with him being glorified, he is ascension. He is the begotten Son and he is high priest. Hopefully I haven't lost too many of you there. Is everybody tracking? Or at least, am I getting at least the 20% tracking? All right, I got at least a few hands up. Good. Perfect. Okay.
20% of the time
we're
tracking all the time.
Okay, perfect. All right. We kind of, again, that's all kind of recap from last week. Just as he says in verse 6, chapter 5, just as he says, God says in another passage, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. We will cover this verse more in the future. I debated talking about it a little bit here, but I'll kind of get to it more in chapter 7. Can anybody tell me what psalm this is from? Yes, I heard 110. Yeah, 110 is correct. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. 110 is correct. There's going to be some interesting things that we'll see there. The Jewish people understood 110 to be messianic, though. And it's important to know that. Just understand that, at least for right now. The Jews understood Psalm 110 to be messianic. Just understand that for right now. That's going to become more relevant, as you'll see later. But this is still really relevant now. And one of the really cool things that we're going to take a look at more in the future is that God was, he's pretty smart, right? So in America, I just want to take a look at the American political system real quick. We have the king, right? No, we have the executive branch, legislative, and then judicial, right? And, you know, the founding fathers, for the most part, tried to stick with a biblical principle, even in the way that they built that base, right? Is there an issue, though, when somebody can have both powers at once, where they can have control of the have control of the executive branch and the judicial? Could there be a potential problem there? Yeah, there definitely could be, right? Because then you're calling all the shots, and then also, depending on what, you know, power you have in Congress or whatnot, you can also have things just thrown through that way too. One thing that was very common throughout ancient history is that lots of kings would also serve as priests. Lots of ancient history, different cultures, they would have kings, and these kings would also be serving as priests. Okay, this would be priests and kings, they God separated them for a reason. Because the priests, and you get to go back, look through the Old Testament. Are the priests and the kings always on the same page? Is that necessarily a bad thing, though? It's not always a bad thing that the priests and king weren't always on the same page, because they could kind of, you know, checks and balance. They could kind of, you know, maybe if somebody's getting out of line, that they could, straighten them out a little bit. But when somebody got power of both, this would be an interesting dynamic. So when we get to Melchizedek, which I'm not really trying to flesh out too much here just yet, you'll see that Jesus in this Melchizedek figure is being referenced to as a king and a priest. That's pretty cool. Jesus is the perfect one. He's the one that makes it work. But he's priest and king. So, in verse 7, though, this is chapter 5, verse 7. Remember, the author of Hebrews is reminding us of Jesus. And this is really cool because chapter 5 really brings in this element of the personal element of Jesus. Do we have a God who's just so far distant from us that we have no, you know, no relation to? We have a God, and the point that he's making here, he really drives this home. You have a God who did come down, and he went through a lot of things, and he suffered, and this is your high priest. He's the one that's worth serving. So with that in mind, in verse 7, in the days of Jesus' flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his piety. Now, I guess I'll ask you guys this real quick. What's the difference between a prayer and a supplication? Oh, okay, we'll get going. Yeah, yeah.
Well, a supplication is a prayer, right? But it's a specific prayer. So you can hear the word supply in the words. God, give me the strength to go through this, for not my will be done, but yours. It's a supplication.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trick question. Perfect. That's pretty much the answer that I was looking for.
That was part of his prayer also was, you know, I really don't want to do this. That was Jesus' prayer. He said, but if I have to, yeah, Dalton said, give me the strength. So it's interesting because a lot of people, when we pray and maybe things don't work out the way we want to, you know, oh, God didn't hear my prayers. Well, no, maybe he did hear your prayers and he's going to strengthen you to get through what's coming and not necessarily deliver you from the trial at hand. And so it's interesting because it flat out says he definitely was heard, but he still went to the cross.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We're not there yet. Yeah. Yeah, you're right on target. Yeah, there's lots of prayers. There's this Garth, I think it's Garth Brooks. I'm not sure who it is. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers or something. I don't know. That kind of bothered me, though. Just so I think God's answering. He's just telling you no. But anyways, yeah, he's not now. Yeah, not. Yep, it could be yes, no, or maybe later, right? Or I'll give you something even better. Really, that's really what it is, if it's a no. But yeah, anyways. So Jesus is offering. Now, I'm not really going to even go into that, but if you want to chew on that a little bit, you can. He offered up prayers and supplications. Yeah, the supplications, as Mr. Toole brought up, it's the idea of something that is we're needing, right? I need supplication. I need supplies. So Jesus, as we look at this, it says in the days of his flesh, while he was a man, he did actually need things, right? He was in a body like yours. He couldn't just, you know, have an endless amount of energy and not have any food, sleep, or, you know, he had to go through those things, and he was praying to God for things that he needed, his daily bread. I'm sure he was praying for those things. Jesus was crying out to God, but as was even referenced to in the Garden of Gethsemane, what was his prayer? This is really going to hurt. If there's another way, God, but your will be done. And that's he accepted that. So here's an interesting thing, though. I was just thinking about this. It says, with loud crying and tears. Now, I'm preaching to myself as much to you, but when was the last time that you had a prayer that you were loudly crying and you had tears? Right? And I'm not saying everybody has different personalities. You know, we all can respond in different ways, but Jesus was going through some really difficult times. Some of us might even laugh and say every prayer is like that, right? But Jesus was going through some really difficult times. When he was in the garden, what was his sweat like? Like drops of blood. And there actually is even, I know it's been brought up a few times up front, but there is actually even a medical phenomena that happens that causes that. That's actually, it can be due to lots of stress. People under a tremendous amount of stress, they'll start, their sweat will start having blood mixed within it because the capillaries are bursting. The idea is that he was going through lots and lots of stress in his life. And I think oftentimes, even for myself, or we as maybe a culture, we try to avoid all kinds of stressors. And oddly enough, in the American culture, we have all these weird stressors that are probably not necessary. So we need to avoid the stressors that are not important, right? Like maybe, you know, social media 24/7 or whatever it might be. Avoid those stressors. But Jesus was, he definitely, and I think about Jeremiah as well, these men, you know, they're people, they had many sorrows, they had many challenges. There are going to be hard things in life, especially when you are fighting the fight. And I was just thinking about this. This is, again, more so to myself than anything. But maybe if I'm not finding myself having to pray harder for certain things, maybe I'm not fighting hard enough battles, right? I don't want to get too complacent or too, I found my groove. If you're out there and you're fighting and you are trying to win souls and you're praying for those who are hurting, different things you're going to encounter in your life. Last year was a really stressful one for me. Lots of different things came at me. But really the idea is that we need to be turning back to God for our every need, prayers and supplications. And Jesus knew where he was going at the end of the day. What was going to happen when Jesus died on the cross? I mean, he was going to be forsaken, right? He knew that the Father, he loved the Father. He did not want to go through the spiritual anguish of taking on the sin of the world to pay that price. I mean, he did want to, but it was very hard. And he knew what that was going to cost. And he did. He did it for us. So it says he went both prayer, supplication, loud crying, and tears to the one able to save him. Now, how many gods are there? This is a pretty easy question, right? There's only one. He says he went to the one who is able to save him. There's a lot of vacant, empty prayers out there. There's only one that really matters. The reason why this is so encouraging and so exciting to me is because remember what we just found out in chapter 4. You guys remember chapter 4? I know it was a little bit ago, but it says, because of Jesus, we get to approach the throne of grace with confidence. That's so hard to really appreciate. And you get to go to God at any time, any moment. We have that we can reach out to God in our daily prayer, in our daily supplication. We have what we need. Jesus is reaching out to God as well, and he was heard because of his piety. Now, let's actually go, before we get too far down the road, let's go to Mark chapter 1. I just love this passage. And I was listening to this podcast recently. Actually, Braden got to listen to a little bit of it recently with me. And it was about this lady from North Korea. And some of you might know about this lady, but she went through a ton of suffering in her life. And in North Korea, I don't want to spend too much time going down that road, but basically is absolutely horrendous. Everything that she said was like worst case scenario. She said, you know, the dictator, Kim Jong-un or whatever his name is, you have to keep up a picture of his of himself in your house, and basically he's worshipped as a god. It's just crazy how they basically, she said they took the Bible and they basically put Kim as Jesus, so God sent his only son, Kim. They basically totally took the Bible structure and then they just reframed it, took Jesus out, made the dictator anyways. And she said that people will literally die trying to rescue this picture of him over their own family because they're supposed to basically worship the picture, the poster of him as him himself because he's supposedly a god or something. And it's just ridiculous. Anyways, everything was like worst case scenario. Like if you didn't do that, for three generations, your whole family might go to prison or they might be executed depending on if it's a political offense or whatever it might be. And she went down this whole thing. But one of the things I thought was really interesting is that her mentality as she came out on the other side is she was like super positive. I'm not exactly sure, but I think she professes to be Christian. There's a lot more I could say on all that. There's really interesting things that she said that were just really encouraging to me, but not the time and place for this. But I just thought it was interesting. She went through all of that stuff, and she came out on the other side. She's like, people like try to make me feel like a victim. She's like, I don't have a victim mentality. She's like, I went through really hard stuff. I went through basically the worst that anybody really could in many ways, and she basically, you know, she found faith, as she says, in whatever way. But and I was just thinking about it. I was like, man, that is just such a different perspective than so many people. She went through all of that suffering, and she came out on the other side, and she had a good perspective in the sense that she realized there's more to life. And I started thinking about, how do we view suffering, right? There's oftentimes we might view suffering in the sense of, well, poor me, woe is me. Maybe we adopt the American victim mentality or, you know, the world's out to get me or whatever might come of it, you know. And, you know, that's not the mentality that Jesus had. He had it really hard too. He had a ton of difficult things, but he understood that through all of this suffering, that on the other side, he was learning things. He was being perfected through this whole process, and he comes out on their side. And he is serving as our high priest now. In Mark chapter 1, verse 32 through verse 39. Now remember, Jesus was very busy all the time, but when evening came, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill and those who were demon-possessed. And the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he was not permitting the demons to speak because they knew who he was. In the early morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went to a secluded place and was praying there. Notice in verse 32, when does this little short story start? It's when evening came, right? The sun had set. It was evening now, and so Jesus was able to sit on the couch and kick off his sandals, right? And then he just was relaxing, no more questions for the day, nothing. So Jesus, at the end of the day, he's going through, you know, he's gone through so much in his day-to-day life, and the whole city gathers at the door, and they're bringing all these people with all these ailments to him. And I bet you it probably wasn't, you know, just 1 hour and they're all gone. Jesus is going into the night, right? He's going late into the night and everybody knew who he was. And then in verse 35, it says, in the early morning, while it was still dark, where is he going to get his source of strength? At prayer. This is super good for me. Just personally, I'm very convicted by this. He's getting his strength in prayer. In Hebrews chapter 5, who is he crying out to? Who is the one who is able to save him? It's the Father, right? Who is the one that we can go to? Mark, was that you? You got your hand up back there? Okay, I'll be back there. Jesus is our perfect example in this. Let's follow his example in that. I'll grab you right now, Mark.
Thank you so much. When you were talking about the tears and the blood, that kind of a medical condition where you're bleeding through your sweat glands. And so I'm trying to think, I don't know if anybody here personally, but myself, I've never bleed through my pores, but what causes it is extreme anxiety or stress. Now remember, Jesus did ask him, take this cup if it's possible, right? So now, at one time I was like Cameron, you know, tall, thin, working with livestock. So you're pushing around a ton and a half animals and no fear, domesticated. So Mel Hirsch took me up to Cook City on a snowmobile. We were back in the camper, and I had to relieve myself, so I excused myself, went out the door, and I was going down the road, and all of a sudden this moose, cow moose, is coming up the road that I'm going down. And I'll never forget, it was about 30 yards, and her ears went back, and she cocked her head, and normally you don't see whites in their eyes. I saw white in her eyes, and I said, "Your road," and I backed up right back into that camper. But even at that point, that amount of stress, I was in danger. I do the mental calculations. She could have got me. I've known people personally that have been stomped. But the type of flight or fight fear, that deep down helplessness that I cannot, there's no way my mind figures out to control a situation, that extreme stress that was before him. And when you're saying that praying, I'm just trying to emphasize what you're already saying, that is something that it's hard to imagine that kind of stress personally, but if we could get to that point in our lives, that focused, would that be powerful?
Yeah. No, I'm just really encouraged by his example to go through all the things he did and to still have his eyes focus on where he should have. Right. And I mean, I think about that with, I'm reusing a lot of examples, but I just remember this one example of this family in Texas, and the little kids are playing with this pet snake, and they're just, there's a couple of kids, and they're playing with the snake. You know, it's not a big deal; it's just a garden snake. And they have it in the tub, and then the parents hear like the kids screaming all of a sudden, and then they run in there. And they're like, "Whoa, what's happening?" And apparently the snake had bit the kid. And then the parents finally actually observed the snake closer as a baby rattlesnake. And apparently, like, baby rattlesnakes are more, they don't have as much control, so they're more venomous than the big rattlesnakes. And they were, like, all worried, so they're checking the kid and all this stuff. And then they realize he was just screaming, and apparently it was just nudging him. It didn't actually bite him, so there was he didn't actually have any bite mark on him. And so they were like, "Oh, thank goodness. We were about to rush him to the hospital, X, Y, and Z." And then they went and told the other little brother, and he ran out of the room immediately. And he said, "It's okay." They were like, "Hey, just so you know, your brother's okay." He's like, "I know." They were like, "Okay." He's like, I ran immediately, and I just went and prayed to God. And so yeah, I prayed that he'd be okay. And I always think about that, the picture of it, innocence through the child's eyes. And obviously, children, there's a whole message in that. Children are inherently spiritual. But where is he going to? He is the Son. and he is going to his father in prayer. And I really like the example of a moose. And there's definitely things that are very challenging in this life. So Jesus is crying out with loud crying tears, the one able to save him from death. Now, Larry already alluded to this. Basically, Larry said it. God is able to save him from death, right? From a just casual glance, when you're first reading that, does it seem like Jesus got what he wanted? Did it seem like God's able to save him from death? Did Jesus die? Yes. So we might be prone to say, well, God didn't spare him, right? Why did he have to go through that thing? And you can obviously fill in the blank. Why did God allow me to go through this thing? I thought God is able to save me from this thing. But God did hear him, and God heard him. And the word there for heard actually means to heed to or to hearken to. The idea is that he actually listened to that, and he actually can even mean obey, this word for heard. So God heard Jesus. He answered that prayer. So God did actually save him from death. That doesn't mean that he saved him from going through that whole process, though. Because the way that God saved him is that he resurrected him, right? And sometimes maybe we get confused and we think that God's going to just spare us through whatever X, Y, and Z might be. There might be a side where you're praying with loud crying and tears. You go through the thing and you're thinking, oh, did God rescue me from this? And on the other side, you will find that he will, and he did. But that doesn't mean that Jesus was spared from that. But why did God hear the prayer of Jesus or the prayers?
So I think one of the things that is, when you talk about Jesus praying in the garden and the whole bleeding sweat thing, and even when he was, he was saying, if there's any other way to do this, Lord, please let it be, but if not, your will be done. I think that part of it was certainly the physical aspect, but I think it was more of the indescribable agony on his part of being separated from God by taking on the sin of mankind. And I think that also relates to how God was able to save him from that separation. And it was because he was heard, and the literal in that is actually from his piety. And not just because of, but from it. And so that's a difference rather than something that is accomplished. It is the way that one lives. And so he, because of his piety, because of who he was and how he lived, he was heard out of that.
Yeah. Excellent point. Yeah, that's a great point, because it was who he was that he listened to him. And I think that I've been thinking about the mindset recently too, the mindset of the Christian. The way that your mindset is, that will impact your life, right? So if you have a pious mindset, you will pray from a pious position. If you're not living a pious lifestyle and then you... which I haven't even covered that word yet, but if you're not living a pious lifestyle and then you decide to all of a sudden pray fervently, right? And oftentimes people might encounter this in their life. Isaiah 59, right? God doesn't hear because there's no communication line, right? The sin is separated. Jesus was heard from his piety. I believe, was that modern literal or was that... Okay, I've read that on one of the two. I don't remember if it was Rotherham's or that, but exactly. So he was heard because of his piety. The word there is reverent. The idea is reverent. It is almost has a tone of being cautious. That's actually really what the tone is, but being cautious or reverent. Let's go to Philippians chapter 2, because this just ties in just perfectly. In Philippians chapter 2, I think this ties in perfectly with this. Let's read verse 5. You can read 1-4. It's really good. It hits a lot of things. The idea is that he's talking about don't be selfish. Don't start, you know, don't take the big piece of pizza for yourself and leave the small one for your friend, right? So verse 5, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. For this reason, God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name above which is every name, so at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow, those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, that every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Perfect. So, Jesus, we are to have the attitude of Jesus, which is, we just saw in Hebrews chapter 5, it's one of piety. But he, even though he existed in the form of God, he did not use that as a thing to be grasped. Or we could say he did not use that to his own advantage. Again, kind of ties back in with chapter 5 a little bit, where he did not bring glory to himself, right? So remember, keep your hand in Philippians chapter 2. You can go back to Hebrews chapter 5. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8, although Jesus was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. Which we'll probably pick this up next week here, but Jesus learned obedience from the things which he suffered. Now in Philippians chapter 2, if you're still there, Jesus humbled himself, he emptied himself, he came down in the form of a bondservant. He came down into a body, a carcass just like ours, right? And he allowed himself to go through all the challenges that we have in so many different ways. But he was obedient, even to what point? All the way to death. To really be humble. I mean, sorry. My words are kind of jumbled right now. Sorry, guys. But to really be obedient, you have to be humble. And you have to be able to trust that whoever is in charge, whoever is over you, you know, pride is really the killer. And anybody who is prideful, they will look at, you know, their parents, they will look at their whoever is over and in charge of them. They will not listen to anything that those people say. They will think that they know better, they think they know best, and they will just disregard whatever is being told to them. Jesus was heard ultimately because of his mentality, his whole lifestyle. And in Philippians chapter 2, we see that it was not just a random, you know, spark of emotion. Jesus just happened to be really pious at that moment. He was very reverent then. It was really who he was, and that he, even though he existed in the form of God, he did not use it to his own advantage. How, and this just ties in perfectly with Hebrews chapter 5, what he's been talking about. How is this so much different than all the politics and all the politicians of today? It's so much different. We have a high priest. He's really driving this whole thing home. We have a high priest who loves us. He came down in the flesh. He went to the cross, and it wasn't just about the physical pain, as was brought up. It was about the spiritual, the emotional, everything he knew that he was going to have to give up. I mean, imagine knowing no sin and then taking on the sin of the world. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 talks a little bit about that, right? He who knew no sin became sin on our behalf. He went through a lot. And the only way you can do that, really, in the whole, the Philippians 2 and Hebrews chapter 5, the whole thing that's falling through here is humility. He was humble. Jesus was a humble guy. Jesus was the perfect Savior. And we'll kind of pick that up next week. You'll see how it ties in.